Hey everybody, Spencer here before the episode. I just want to say thank you so much for listening this week. This is an exciting episode where we get to talk about the top 5 decks from week 1 standard. John and I are sick this week, so there's a little bit of coughing on this episode that didn't end up getting edited out. I tried to get most of it, but I'm pretty sure that I missed some. John is also getting a new mic. I'm sending it to him this week, so we should be able to get that for you here in the next week or two, right after the Pro Tour is when it should be sure to happen. I want to thank so much to our patrons for helping us get that to happen. If you want to help those kind of improvements to the show, go to patreon.com/ccmtg, become a patron. It means the world to us, and it helps us do stuff like that. Thank you so much for listening this week. I'm sorry for any of the inconveniences here. We're improving the podcast in so many ways, including getting rid of the intro for some of our newest listeners that thought the intro music was too long. We're going to keep the outro music for those listeners that love that at the end of the episode, but we'll get right into the content unless there's some intro like this coming up. So thank you everybody so much. Enjoy this week's episode of Constructive Criticism. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I am joined by my co-hosts, John Stern.
Hey, guys.
And Seth Manfield.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
John, you're straight off of a PTQ. Seth, you just got back from Seattle. How are you guys doing?
I didn't play PTQ, did I? Oh, yeah, I just played the girl deck. Yeah, that didn't go great, but I'm doing well. I forgot I even played that.
Just wipe it from your memory, John. Wipe it from your memory.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been streaming. I've been streaming quite a bit on my Twitch channel. That's been going well, and yeah, that's what I've been doing. I was also in Seattle for the NPL boot camp last week, so got a lot of great advice from the Wizards of the Coast employees. Got to meet a bunch of employees of Wizards of the Coast, everyone who's kind of behind the NPL initiative, and got photos done. If you want, like, I got hair and makeup done. I did interviews. There's a lot that got done. So that was a good experience for me. And I'm hoping that once the NPL gets going, you know, the few days I spent in Seattle, you all will have more of an idea of what they were all about.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, this week is pretty exciting because we need to talk about week 1 standard as we got the PTQ online that John got to participate in, as well as the SEG Open. So that's what we'll be talking about this week. Before we do that, we want to thank our sponsor at Oasis Games. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com and get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. 15% off of it at Oasis Games is one of the best deals on the internet. I highly recommend you check them out. If you've already used that code before, use the code WouldThatBeGood, no spaces at checkout, to get 4% off of every single order. With that being said, don't forget to check out the rest of our network over at constructivecriticism.com. We've got streams, we've got podcasts, we got videos. Just definitely check it out, constructivecriticism.com. But let's get right into the point of this podcast. We're going to start with hashtag always improving. Hashtag is the point. Hashtag always improving is the point of the show. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. John and I are both recovering with voices that you guys will love to hear this week. So I'm going to try and actually, you know, let others talk more this week, which is better for the show anyway. But as my voice cracks down, Seth, why don't you go first about what you've done to improve at Magic this week?
Well, I basically already said it, but probably should have waited for this particular section. Sorry, everyone. But going to the MPL, one of the things from the boot camp that I learned is and in this particular podcast is, like, over the years, I've been trying to become a better speaker. And so, like, if I'm streaming, I'm speaking, like, and playing games. So I think that is one of the biggest takeaways. And I learned that from when I went to, like, I did an interview, you know, as part of this when I was in Seattle. And they were like, wow, you have, like, your speaking has done, like, a 90 degree, like, a 180, I guess, because it is, I mean, it was a positive feedback. And so, and I've been getting positive feedback from the listeners of the podcast. So that's kind of what I've been working on. And thanks. If you've kind of followed me, you know that I've given some duds before.
Well, I think that I've gotten that same feedback. You know, listeners have come to me and said, you know, Seth has really improved week to week in an unexpected way. This is a lot harder than people realize. I've been doing this for 5 years now, and I still have a hard time with it, Seth. And you've made strides, and you should really be proud of yourself in that. And I hope that the podcast does help you in the streaming aspect.
Appreciate it.
John, what about you? What have you done to improve at Magic the Gathering this week?
So what I did all weekend was watch Star City and streams pretty much all weekend. There's no coverage of the GP, but I want to see Standard anyway. And, you know, it was really, I thought it was great. Standard looks amazing. In terms of improving, so when I'm coming up to a big tournament, I kind of switch gears from like just trying to get better at Magic in general to now I'm like focused on getting better at preparation and you know, being ready for the tournament. So I had an interesting discussion with a friend of mine who we were just talking about, you know, what we expected out of Standard the first weekend. And he was like, I really want to play the Red Dragon. What's it called? Scargan Hellkite or Scargan. And he was like really high on that card. And that's what I think you liked also, right?
I haven't gotten to play with it yet. I've been too busy playing other decks, but it is a card that I want to try.
I was just thinking about it. I'm like, why do you want to, like, I was just talking to him. I'm like, I'm questioning him sort of to help him like vocalize his thought process. And I'm like, what matchups do you want it on against? Like, I don't think you want that deck against Mono Red. It costs 5 mana. I don't think you really want it against the mid-range decks that have Vivian Reed. I don't think you really want it against Reclamation, Turbo Fog. So, and it's like an expensive threat against control. So, I mean, it's okay against control, but like it's traditionally a card that would shine in mid-range, but mid-range right now has like Chupacabras and Vivian Reed and lots of answers for flyers. So that got me thinking, and I don't know how accurate that is. Like he said, it's still good against some of those decks, but it got me thinking that one of the things that I usually realize too late in my testing process is where the holes in the format are and what cards are suddenly more, you know, better positioned. So what I've been doing this morning a little bit, I spent some time is like coming up with like a playset list for each color. And then I'm going to make sort of a spreadsheet and sort of, you know, this card is good against, like there's a few pillars of the format. There's going to be a Golgari deck. There's going to be a Teferi deck. There's going to be a Mono Red deck. You know, there's going to be like maybe Turbo Fog and a few other ramp strategy. And you can say, okay, like this card is well positioned here and not here and not here. And then maybe like when you're looking at Cyborgs later on, or you're like, you know, Wild Growth Walker hasn't pulling its weight. What can I put in that slot? Maybe that's when you look for these cards. And so I'm trying to get that work done now. So it will help me with deck building and things like that. So that's what I'm working on right now.
Awesome. Awesome. Good to hear. For me, I've been working on a couple things. I streamed this week, so I, you know, got to play some limited. I'm really lost in this limited format. I actually did a video of it over on the YouTube channel if you want to check that out. This is probably my worst win percentage since I started playing limited, you know, competitively. Limited is my favorite format for what it's worth. Sealed specifically is my favorite format, and I'm not winning at sealed. I'm not doing great at draft, and this one's been challenging for me. I also watched a ton of coverage. I sat right here on this couch over here, watching coverage, building decks, looking at seal pool, stuff like that. And then I made an update to the quest for 10. So another thing that you can check out if you're a patron of Constructive Criticism, you want to join in the or Trophy Mages, you want to join in the challenge, just head over to the Patreon page. There's a link to the Google Doc that will be updated with the decks in the quest for 10, as well as the criteria for what makes a deck in the quest for 10, as well as my notes on what's going on there. So kind of a lot. It's interesting. I have a question for you, Seth, as we've both been streaming a little bit more lately. Do you find it harder to let me preface this with one of the things I've been trying to do, and one of the reasons that I did the Quest for 10 challenge is to hold myself accountable on my streams and really try and focus on improving while I'm doing that. Because I found that when I first started streaming, it was really easy to just like jam games, turn off the stream, and be like, I don't know what I learned. How have you approached that?
I mean, the best way that I learn is by trying different cards, but also just winning and losing. Like today, I played a bunch and I lost a lot, you know. And so, when I'm losing a lot, I tend to not want to play a deck anymore. You know, that's my process. So, think that's a lot of people's processes, but the fact that I'm streaming a lot means that I get to try a lot of different unique strategies. And there's been some that I've stumbled upon, and you know, if you watch my stream, you know that I've won, you know, 12 matches in a row on stream, you know, and that type of thing. And so with decks that other people aren't playing, I'm not going to give that information, you know, say, oh, I know you want to know what deck, but that's a little bit of a plug there, but you know, that's kind of my process. So take it for what you will. I'm not necessarily going to play with 10 matches with a deck. If I think a deck is bad, I'm just going to be done and move on.
Sure. Makes a lot of sense. Cool. Well, let's move on to our next segment. Before we do that, we want to give a special shout out to our newest patron, Josh C. Josh C is a longtime listener, first time patron. Thank you so much, Josh, to becoming that patron. It means a lot to us. And, it was really refreshing for me to see that name. It's really appreciated.
Welcome on board, Josh. Welcome on board.
Yeah. One of the benefits you get for being a patron, though, is you get to ask one of the you know, join us in the hashtag always improving segment by asking a question. This week, our question says, what are the best decks in a best for one meta game? Example deck list, if viable, please. But, you know, I can't seem to pass Platinum tier with Golgari. This question was asked at the beginning of January on our Patreon thread. But it's funny because I'll go first on this, but you know, there are two styles for me. You know, I like broad answers and I like big questions when it comes to best of one, because it lets you either, you know, answer everything or make them have the right answers. And so for me, you know, some of the things that I've tried is you know, mono red and mono blue aggro. Excuse me. Soul Tie is something that I'm trying right now, and then the deck that I actually have the most wins with in ladder recently is the Gates control deck that plays the 3-mana deal damage equal to your Gates card.
Gates of Blaze
thing. Yeah. So that card is like just a sweeper that's really inexpensive that answers, you know, it answers Carnage Tyrant, it answers these hard to deal with threats. And that's kind of how I approach best for one. Is, you know, so for example, in my Golgari deck and in my Sultai deck, I play an Assassin's Trophy, right? I want broad answers to things, even if I'm sacrificing a little bit, because we only have one match and I don't want to be caught, you know, with my pants down, so to speak. So that's my answer to this question. Why don't you go next there, Seth?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you there. Like, I also like to have a lot of like unique answers, and I've been playing with the Gates deck as well in best of one. I have another card that I've liked in that deck, by the way, is Mass Manipulation as a way to gain control of planeswalkers that I don't think players are playing, because the Gates deck it does its thing really well in that it's ramping, it's able to play. I mean, I'm sure we're going to get in some of the specific cards in a little bit, but I would kind of piggyback off of your answer there, Spencer, and agree with you.
John, what about you?
I mean, I have not, because I haven't like constructed on Arena yet, but I think I kind of have a different take than you guys. Like, I think the decks that I would like to play in a best of one. So if you take a deck like Golgari, for example, that's the deck he came up with in his question. He said he'd been grinding with that.
Yeah.
So that's a deck that has a lot of cards that are really good in some matchups. Like, Wild Growth Rocker is really good in some matchups and really bad in others. You know, Ravenous Chupacabra is a completely dead card in some matchups. And their sideboard, like Duress is a really good sideboard card, stuff like that. I think those kind of decks that have a powerful sideboard that can really configure their deck for the matchup they're playing are going to suffer in a best of one, because you don't want to have a whole bunch of dead cards in a matchup. So the kind of decks, like, you know, I don't know how good mono red is in best of one right now, because I don't know what the metagame is, but that's the kind of deck that the sideboard doesn't really matter. Your deck is doing the same thing every time. It's a proactive deck. I think that's going to be a very good best of one deck.
I agree with what John's saying, in that a deck like, even though I think the Sultai mid-range deck that has been doing really well is very good, it's best suited to best of three. And if I was going to choose, so for me, I have been playing the Gates deck because I enjoy playing Gates, right? I just have fun with it. I'm putting Gates into play. I'm ramping. I'm doing all of this crazy stuff. That being said, if my main goal was to win and that was it, I would probably just play mono red aggro on MTG Arena if that's what you're looking for, because it's simple, it's good, it's straightforward. The matches get done quickly. My goals are a little bit different than that, so that's kind of why I've played a little bit with it, but we know mono red is good. Like, that's, if you play on Arena, you're going to play against it a lot.
I do think the ramp deck though is also potentially good for best of one. I don't think that's the kind of deck that really relies on its sideboard. It's sort of doing the same thing pre sideboard and post sideboard in every matchup and just hoping that's good enough. Like, maybe Gates of Blaze isn't good in every matchup. That's fine, but you know, Hydroid Press is going to be good in every matchup.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say that I think that the same thing is true of the Gates deck that's your mono red, which is it's either asking a question or going over the top of your question. So it is suited a little bit better for best of one than some of the other decks. One of the things that I have liked about the Sultai deck, though, Seth, is that it gets to play Hydroid Crisis as kind of like a good card against aggro and a good card against control and a good card in the mirror. Like, it's like a good in every matchup card, which has been really good for that deck to get versus some of the Planeswalkers that you might have been playing in Golgari.
Oh yeah, that card has just been great. I spent 5 hours just playing Sultai on Arena, and the Crisis was, it was, I mean, it, like, people were asking me, oh, like, how do you beat Carnage Tyrant? Or how do you combat this or that? And I'm like, Hydroid Crisis, have you seen what the card does? Like, you play it, and then once you play it, you have enough gas that you can just play it. Like, your worst case scenario is just replaying Crisis every single turn for the rest of the game at a certain point. Like, you have fine finalities to get it back. Like, some versions even have Memorial. So it's just like, Crisis, okay, Crisis, okay. Like, you just have all of this stuff. Like, it's just, I mean, in that deck, it's like the late game now is just absurd with the four Crassus in it.
Is it Crassus or Crisis?
Crisis. Sorry if I'm saying.
I don't know what it is.
I think it's Crisis. I think I was saying Crassus. I don't know.
All right, whatever. I say Crassus, but, you know, I'm probably wrong.
Well, speaking of it, it is our card of the week. So for those who don't know, this card is, we actually talked about it a little bit in our set reviews, but, you know, it's a green-blue X for a jellyfish Hydra beast. When you cast a spell, you gain half life and draw X cards, rounded down each time. It's got flying and trample, and it enters the battlefield equal to the number equal to X. So this card is card of the week because this card dominated the SCG. It completely dominated the SCG, and it is changing the format around it in a way that, I just want to say, guys, I said this was going to be the best card in the standard. I said it, John.
You were high on the card. I was pretty low on the mid-range deck. I was wrong.
Yeah, I also liked it. Maybe not as much as you, Spencer, but it was going to be good.
You know, I
didn't, like, there's a lot of Esper decks in the top 8.
So yeah, there was 2 Esper decks in the top 8, which is definitely true. One of the things that I think that I didn't realize about this card is I didn't initially think of it in just like straight Golgari, just like kind of replacing some of the Planeswalkers and Carnage Tyrant. It kind of makes sense, right? If you're like trying to make the game longer with, you know, your Explore package, you know, it is a significantly better top deck than Vivian Reed, which I actually saw in Seth's stream this week. Seth was playing a mirror against just straight green-black. His opponent played a Carnage Tyrant and then played another Carnage Tyrant. And Seth is like, Hydroid Crisis, draw into Crisis, Hydroid Crisis. And Seth was like, well, I don't know how I lose. And sure enough, his opponent, like, top decks Fine Finality, and Seth is like, does that matter? Like, did that do anything? So Seth, I mean, you played it in a deck that I don't think any of us thought was the go-to for this card. What did you think?
I agree. I didn't think about it in that specific application. And there's going to be a lot of things that players overlook, and that's why someone came up with the idea of putting it in Golgari, and it turns out Golgari was already the best deck going into the format, and you're just adding the best card from the new set into what was the best deck. So if you combine best card – best deck and you just mash them together, that sounds pretty good. And yeah, like Golgari, also the nice thing about it is you have some ramp, right? You have the Land of Worlds, but you also have your explore creatures, and this gives you something to do with all of your extra lands. Like if you ever hit two lands off Jade Light now, you can actually, it's just like such a huge, huge game, because those lands are going to add up with your Crassuses, with your Fines. And I've been playing Crassus in other things. Like we're seeing it in the various Simic Adana's Climb decks. We are seeing it in, we already mentioned the Gates deck or the ramp strategies. And it turns out like it's just a really good late game engine to put four Hydroid Crassus in your deck. I can't say I'm super surprised that it's this good, but the fact that it's seeing this much play, and I think the price tag, players are like, what? Is this card really like actually worth this much money, or should I actually, you know, invest into Crassus now? Like, it's just a good card. That's what we said from the original. I thought the power level was there, and
you know, yeah. I think Seth, you on the podcast talked about how you were a big fan of X spells, right? You were a big fan of them because they scale, right? And this card didn't need to be that good at 4 mana. It didn't need to be that good at 6 mana. But once you get past that, it's insane. One of the lists that we're talking about this week on the podcast is a Gate stack that plays 4 of these from former co-host of the show Mason Clark, who took 20th, and he actually said what he tweeted this. He tweeted today that his favorite play from the weekend was a mass manipulation to steal what is the 1 mana 2/2 wizard with haste? Anyway, he
Lava Runner.
He stole a Lava Runner, and then he also texted me. He's like, I played a Hydroid Crassus for 1 for the win. So he played a 1/1 Crassus to win a game, and it's just like the fact that he had that line available to him says a lot about this card. And I think something that maybe even I didn't appreciate, right? Like I thought of it as like a bad Solemn on 2, and maybe we underappreciated how the modes on this card.
I think where I specifically underestimated was how good it was for 6 mana. I think that, like, I just, you know, draw 2, gain 2, you have a 4/4. That's actually just very good, and it draws you into, you know, another one, and then you just go off, basically. I think at 2, you know, it's not what you really wanted to do in Golgari on 4 mana, but, you know, it's fine. You can do it.
Definitely not in Golgari. I think that's the poor use of the card in Golgari. But
so I was playing a match on stream earlier today, even where, look, I played Crassus already. Probably I've cast the card 100 times, right? But I was playing against the card, and I was like, okay, I just made like a bunch of Thopters, and I was just like, all right, I have to get past the turn. I can just chump the Crassus. I'm at 1, and I'm good, right? And then, this is on stream with, there's a lot of people watching me. I think I had like 700 viewers on my stream, and then all of a sudden, bang! Like I wasn't looking at the chat, and it's just, of course, it trampled through for lethal, and I could have just killed it, and it was just. It was a pretty embarrassing moment, but it's like, oh, that also has trample. Like, what the hell? Like, I guess I forgot in the moment.
You always forget the flamble, man.
You think about it.
You always forget the flamble.
You think about the flying, the life gain, the card draw, like everything else. And it's like, oh, yeah, boom, kill you. Like,
as somebody who played a lot of Primeval Titan, that happens to me, or still does. Somebody will like block with a spirit token in Modern. I'll be like, all right, take 5. And they're like, it has trample. It does all those things and also has trample. Why does it have trample? I also, by the way, forgot it had trample. I was luckily not streaming, but I definitely blocked a Crassus and instant conceded as I went to like, no.
Oh, I feel bad when it happens and you're like, you feel like such an, I felt like such a moron in the moment. And I was just like, wow. Well,
flying trample is a weird combination. Like, what kind of creature has flying and trample? It's, you know.
Yeah. Dragon Lord Atarka, by the way, has flying and trample. Fun fact.
It's a nice one.
So that is our card of the week this week. Let's move on to our main topic, our training grounds. We want to talk power rankings in Standard. So for those who don't know how the power rankings work, you get points according to your finish at events. We're using the standard PTQ and the standard SCG Open. You get 6 points for first, 5 points for second, four for top four, three for top eight, two for top 16 or top 32, and one for top 64 if available. And we have our first top 64 available to us in a long time right now in the form of the SCG Open. So we have really good statistics on what did well at the SCG Open. So these points are weighted according to the common records that a deck can acquire. So you might say, like, well, why is top 32 worth the same as top 16? Well, because oftentimes in an event, top 32 and top 16 have almost identical records, and you're basing that off of tiebreakers. So this is really close to rated to how many match points they had at the end of the day. So with that being said, we're going to start with Esper Control in fifth place. So this deck comes in with 11 points. So the list that I have pulled up is the Nick Cowden in fourth place. So really quick, kind of a simple summary of this. This deck is kind of this. It's just your Teferi control deck of the format. It looks like I looked at a few lists, a lot of them playing 27 lands again, trying to get the right number of sources in their deck so that they can cast Kaya's Wrath and absorb in the same deck. This is important for a few reasons. I think that, you know, Kaya's Wrath being our first 4-mana Wrath since, is it straight Wrath since Supreme Verdict, right? Languish was the last 4-mana sweeper.
We have Settle, but it's different.
Sure, yeah, that's fair. But the first card that destroys creatures that are all in play with no conditions in quite a while. And then Absorb, it's funny, when we think back to during spoiler season, the number of people that thought Absorb isn't even as good as
Sinister Sabotage.
Yeah, Sinister Sabotage. We came on this podcast and said, listen, that 3 life, it's going to be worth a lot. And when you see the number of lightning bolts flying around, it's definitely, definitely worth a lot. So with all that being said, what do you guys think that some of the key cards in this deck are that have put this deck over the top over something like Jeskai? We'll start with you, Seth.
So I personally have also been streaming this deck. I think this deck is really good as well. There's a lot that it has going for it. It's been my favorite control deck of the format earlier on. Definitely heard, you know, is this better than Jeskai? And that's definitely a discussion point. But as you mentioned, Spencer, Kaya's Wrath, you know, 4-mana sweeper, if there's a lot of these small creature decks, like maybe Boros is being pushed out of the format now that control decks have an answer to it, you know, a clean answer, for instance. That might be true. Probably need more information on that. Looking at Nick's specific list here, I am a little bit, well, so it's a little bit different than the one I'm playing because he has 3 copies of Precognitive Perception, whereas the one I'm playing just has 4 Chemist's Insight. And that is something that I'm interested in trying to figure out which of those cards is better. Because a lot of the time with the Esper deck, you do want to be operating on your opponent's turn with the fact that you have all of these counter spells. So, yeah, there's a couple card choices in the list, like the 4 copies of Syncopate, where that might be, that's a lot of Syncopates. But overall, I think the list is really solid, and I am not at all surprised to see it do well this past weekend.
There, you know, with people trying out Rhythm of the Wild, one of the things that I see in this list, John, is that he has 4 Vraska's Contempts. One of the cards that's been MVP for me in trying out both Esper and Blue White has actually been Ixalan's Binding. So Mortify has actually gone up a lot on my radar as like a really just strong Magic card right now. Is that something that interests you in your control decks right now?
Well, I mean, so there are some limitations on Jeskai. So they had Definite Clarion as their Wrath for small creatures, but they couldn't deal with like bigger things as easily. Their removal is very situational. They had to play stuff like Seal Away. Vraska's Contempt is a much more universal answer, and so is Mortify. I mean, dealing with something like Reclamation or whatever is going to be really useful. Yeah, I think like Esper is a solid shell. I think Teferi is, you know, as good as all the new cards are, Teferi is probably still the best card in Standard. in my opinion. And, you know.
You mean besides Hydrocrassus, right?
No, I mean, I think it's. I don't think, yeah, okay. I think Teferi is by far better than Crassus. But yeah, I think this is a solid shell. I think the black, you get proactive removal. You don't have to wait for them to attack with Seal Away. You can cast down or Moment of Craving. It's just the Wrath is great. This is it's going to be one of the decks to beat, I think, going forward. So yeah, Chromium also is worth, it's a different play pattern than Niv-Mizzet. You don't have to play the Crackling Drakes. You don't need as many like creature win conditions because you have something like that. You have Teferis.
When I was streaming with Blue White at the end of the last format, I kept saying I was playing the 7-mana dinosaur. I don't remember what it's called. But the one that you discard 3 cards to like give it Hexproof. Nezahal. And when you're playing Esper, you just get access to the strictly better Nezahal. Like, obviously it doesn't have the draw card condition, but you don't really need it when you're taking them for 7 in the air every turn. So
yeah. I do think Mortify is a big reason why this is better. That to me, I could see playing more than 2 even.
And there's also a lot of Theater of Thrones. There's a decent amount of Rakdos, and that card is a nightmare, right? If you're playing Jeskai, because you just like you might not have any ways to get it off the board. Maybe you're playing something, but Mortify is the answer you want. That's definitely come up a couple times. As far as Chromium, for me, if you're playing Chromium, or if you're not playing Chromium rather, and your opponent is, and you're playing a mirror match, the person with the Chromium is just going to be at a massive advantage, because that is also beyond all of the other things it does. It's a mirror breaker.
I completely agree.
I think also Experimental Frenzy has been pushed out of the format just by the fact that Mortify exists.
Well, I also think that the red decks don't really need Frenzy anymore. We'll get into that when we talk about mono red, but I think Frenzy is less necessary in the red decks. They're more streamlined and don't really need it.
Yeah, I would say, just while we're talking about Chromium, it still dies to the Wrath, right? So like, it might be maybe more of a sideboard card. I don't know. He's probably 1.
Yeah, that's true.
Might not completely break the mirror like it used to, is what I'm saying. But
yeah, where Nezahal did. Nezahal did do work there, which is something you could try in that spot. Let's go to number 4 in this list, though. This was probably the biggest surprise to me in the next to do well. We have Bant Midrange coming up next, and this deck came in with 12 points, only 1 point more. But so on this one, we included both the Bant Midrange decks and the Bant Adonis Climb decks. They were just all a mishmash of Midrange, and I didn't think that just because one played Climb and one didn't, that they should be separated, because the decks were all tons of cards off. But one of the things that I think was pretty common between the decks is Growth Chamber Guardian, some number of either Planeswalkers or hard to deal with threats like Hadana's Climb, and just a mishmash of answers similar to other mid-range decks. But this is the only one in the top 5 that kind of didn't have a clear direction as to what it was doing. There were lots and lots of different builds of Bant Midrange. I mean, the second place deck is very different from the other deck in top 8. What did you guys think of these Bant Midrange decks?
Well, I'm just looking at the list now. So you're talking about the one that made top 8 of the Star City, Jonathan Hobbs.
Yep.
That's one. So I think, it looks like a mishmash, but I mean, I think that he's got some really, he's built his deck on solid principles in that almost everything can be cast at instant speed, including the Angels of Grace. So he's leaving up mana every turn, and it could be for Settle the Wreckage, it could be for March of the Multitudes, it could be for Syncopate, it could be for an Angel, a Frailed Mystic. He's just got, it seems like it's a really difficult deck to play against, which is really good on week 1 of a format where people are just like, I don't even, everyone is going to get caught by a Frailed Mystic at least once, and then they're going to be like, oh yeah, that's a card. And, this is, I don't know, this looks like the Depose Deploy, makes Thopter tokens. Like, he's just got all these different effects that, are going to be really tricky to play against. So I think it's a cool deck. I don't know if it's got the staying power.
Yeah, I'd almost rather call this deck Bant Flash than Bant Midrange, you know, because that's what I've heard some players refer to it as. Frilled Mystic it's a really high power card, and if you're able to combine it with a lot of other instant speed effects, then like it's been impressive. It snowballs games, and it like whenever they play it, and you're like, oh yeah, they could have Frilled Mystic here, and then it's. Like normally, it's really good whenever it gets played. So
I need to correct myself. The other Bant Midrange deck from the SEG that was titled Bant Midrange took 27th, not top 8. Sorry about that mistake. I want to echo what you two are saying. Even more so, if you look at the creatures that don't have instant speed, You know, both Growth Chamber Guardian and Shalai can be activated at instant speed, letting you use your mana during your opponent's turn even more often. So I completely agree on that front.
I do have some concerns about his, like, I haven't really delved deep into the mana bases of the format yet, but like History of Vanalia and Frilled Mystic in the same deck, to me, that's scary. I'm concerned about that. I know there's good lands, but still.
You could say the same thing about putting Absorb and Kai's Wrath in the same deck, couldn't you?
Yeah, you can, except that like History of Vanalia is like really good on turn 3, and it's like not nearly as good later on, whereas the Wrath will be good on turn 5 or 6.
Fair.
But I think, okay, so we're talking about Frilled Mystic. Like, I've seen some builds. I was watching a streamer, I don't remember who it was, play Frilled Mystic in basically a mid-range blue-green deck, right, with a lot of, like, I don't know what he had, Biogenic Ooze, just a whole bunch of stuff. And every time he left up mana for Frilled Mystic, like watching him play, I'm like, his opponent should definitely not cast anything this turn. They have board advantage to attack. And every time they would cast a spell into it. Whereas this deck, you can't do that. Like if you just pass a turn, you know, he's going to do something else really good against you. So I think this is a really good way to play Frilled Mystic. Anyway, that's all.
Is this the way that you guys would prefer to build this deck versus, you know, the other deck in top 32? It was had like Deputy of Detention and Hydroid Crisis, and was like more classic mid-range deck with mana creatures, planeswalkers type of stuff.
I think they're just different decks. I think that like Seth was saying, this is like a flash deck, and those are mid-range decks. And I think Hadama's Climb is like a really powerful card, really good right now. And so is Crisis and some of those other cards. So, like, I don't know. I'd probably prefer that, but I probably wouldn't play Frilled Mystic in it.
Yeah, like, I want to try this version of Bant because the version of Bant that I tried this week was, like, a Bant Bugler deck with Militia Buglers and Deputies and all that sort of stuff. And
oh, my gosh. Bugler grabs Crisis.
And Crisis.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. My life got so good right now.
I played against a Crisis deck that was playing Growing Rites of Itlamok today.
Really?
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah. Biogenic Ooze also.
That's pretty cool.
And Incubation to find it.
Can we just say how sweet the standard format is?
Yeah.
So I agree. One of the things that I had trouble with when putting these power rankings together this week, and this is typical of week 1 power rankings, is that decks are just so different from each other, right? The number of cards different than any individual deck is, it's going to be pretty significant in week 1. And so, you know, I think that it's clear from the number of points that's got that there are ways to build Bant that can be successful. It's about finding the right way to build those type of decks. And maybe there's multiple versions of Bant that can be good. And it just kind of just depends. Let's move on to the next deck. In third place, we have Gate Control. This one is the only other one with two, I would call, archetypes together. We do have the Nexus version and the, I don't know, do you want to call it the Ram version? what, you know, the Gatebreaker Ram version? Either way, there's two different versions of this deck. There's one that's closer to, you know, the typical Nexus of 8 deck. But one thing is really common between both decks, which is why I combine them. They play Securitas Root, they play Growth Spiral, they play Gates, and they play Gates Ablaze. That is.
Do they all play Guild Summit?
I do believe they all play Guild Summit too. Yeah.
Most of them do. There's a couple that don't.
Yeah.
But I want to say that the way to do it is by playing the Gatekeeper Ram. Like, do not play it. Well, not that it's better, even though I think there's a decent chance that the Ram version is better, but I despise Nexus of Fate. If you like, whenever I'm asked about Nexus of Fate, I despise the card. And that just playing the Gatekeeper Ram, especially if you're on Arena and it's a sheep. Remember the fact that you were playing a sheep and it is like a 3-mana 6/6. Or,
oh man, whatever. Yours are way too little. Mine are 12/12s.
Yeah, I mean it's huge. It feels way better to me. So do yourself a favor and at least give that a try before picking.
Yeah, I think all of them also are playing Arcway Angel for what it's worth too. So the decks.
I will say that's not true. I don't think that's true.
Oh, are the Nexus versions not? I thought I saw two Nexus versions playing it, but.
Well, I was playing for a while just a teamer version that based on the version that Yuya Watanabe was playing, and then I played a version, a four color version with Deafening Clarions.
I saw that version.
Yeah.
I was talking about the ones that placed. I think that there were multiple.
Oh sure, the ones that placed in this.
Yeah, term. Yeah. I think there were multiple Nexus versions that were also playing Arcway Angel, but this is my favorite deck so far in this format. I think that, you know, when I look at the, you know, the Gates deck, whether it's four color Gates, whether it's, you know, one of the things that I've been waiting for since Securitas Root is spoiled is like, was the last time we had an explosive vegetation that didn't see standard play? I don't think it's ever happened. I think that literally any time they've printed this card, it has seen standard play. And this it finally broke through in a tournament this weekend. I'm with Seth though. I think that Gatebreaker Ram is. It's funny the number of people that have like looked at it when I'm playing Arena and they're just like, oh, okay, I guess I die. However, I've also had the number of people that don't realize that it has Trample that have blocked it and then died. It's also been pretty high. I've been interested though. You mentioned Mass Manipulation. This is a card that I actually cut when Mason sent me the list. Can you talk to me about the Mass Manipulation that you have been casting in this deck, and how did it typically work out?
So I think Mass Manipulation is the card against the Sultai decks that you are really like you're leaning on it, because a lot of the times like they might just have a Llanowar and a Vivian Reed, and they might just like. You're not a deck that's putting a ton of pressure on your opponent. You're looking to take over later in the game. But like if they just like play out a Planeswalker, like a Vivian, for instance, and they just start ticking it up and up and up, like you have to be able to. You can't just kill their creatures. You have to be able to answer that as well, because like they might have a removal spell for your Ram or for your Vivian also gets rid of Hydrocrassus, which is your other creature, right? So like you need like. If you're able to take the Vivian and steal it, that is going to be the difference maker. And it's happened to me multiple times where my opponent, just having this card in my deck, even though it's been in like my bottom 30 cards or whatever, I've still drawn into it later because the Gates deck draws so many cards. But say the Vivian just goes like tick up, tick up, tick up. Now it's on 8. It's been multiple times where I've been like, okay, now I'll take it. Now I'll make the Vivian emblem on my side of the battlefields. Like that's happened multiple times, and it's that turns out working out really well for you.
Yeah, I'll kind of add to the you draw a lot of cards thing. One of the things that I've noticed is with Guild Summit, you actually kind of have to be careful with the number of Guild Summits that you play, because you can often get in a situation when like you might be able to deck yourself, and you have to kind of be careful as to how you use that card. So I have played some of them blank, just like, all right, I'm just going to play a gate this turn and move forward rather than trying to draw 13 cards, you know, or whatever that turn.
Yeah, like you want the first one is insane. You don't necessarily need to play more. After you have one in play, you already have enough gas.
Exactly. So. It's definitely something that I'll probably play the second one against control, kind of blank, and so that every gate I play gets me enough gas to get past whatever they're doing. But you have to certainly be careful with that card. Is this a deck that you gotten to try at all yet, John?
I have not, but I do think I will try it out soon. It's definitely interesting. Yeah, I think it's powerful.
One thing that I've been trying in this deck, if you're a member of the critics group, is the 3-mana elf, the 1/1 that you look at your top 5 cards, put a land into play tapped.
Elvish Rejuvenator.
Yeah, Rejuvenator. That card has really helped me, specifically because I've been playing so much best of one, playing against a lot of mono red, and it's able to either eat a removal spell or just gain you enough time to ramp you into your Arcway Angels or your Colossuses or, you know, your Crasises, and it's been very, very good. You know, one of the things that we see here in Mason's list is he's playing Plaza of Harmony. The number of times that my Elvish Rejuvenator has grabbed a Plaza to gain me 3 life in the mono red matchup has actually been really high too.
I mean, it is a 1/1 though. It's hard for me to imagine a 1/1 is so good against a deck with 4 Goblin Chain Whirlers, but I mean,
that's totally fair. There was a game where I had 2 of them down and thought I had stabilized, and they played a Chain Whirler, and I was like, oh man, that was a tough beat, but it has actually helped me quite a bit in that matchup.
I think getting the Plaza is pretty relevant.
Yeah,
the fact that you're digging into that.
Yeah, and. Yeah, you know, it does let you do a couple things. One of the things that I also noticed about this deck, and I don't know if you can speak to that, Seth, is that instant speed explore in this deck is also really good, because you can instant speed in a gate that makes you less care about it being tapped. That has mattered to me a little bit as well.
Oh yeah, Growth Spiral has been excellent. I will say, looking at this particular list, I don't think that it's playing the enchantment that you gain 3 life when the ramp enchantment that's what did you say, John?
Paradise.
Yeah, Gift of Paradise, sorry. It's not playing Gift of Paradise. And so that is a card that I'm playing in the version that I've been running, because I like the incidental life gain.
Yeah.
Like, against mono red.
That's exactly one of the reasons that I like the elf, was the same thing. I wanted to, you know, buffer my life total in any ways that I could find against mono red. I completely agree.
Yep.
Well, let's move on to the next deck we have. We have mono red. Oh, I actually don't think... Did I give the points for the gate deck? It came in with 16 points. So that was... the first big jump, a whole 4 points above the last deck. But the next jump is even bigger. We have mono red coming with 31 points. John, I think it was before the podcast you were talking about this. You think this deck might just be good? Like, it's just a good deck?
I think, I don't know what I was saying before. I think before the podcast I was saying, I don't know, I don't know if mono red deck is good in the metagame or what the metagame will be. But this is a very good mono red deck. I mean, every card is just above the curve, pretty much. I mean, you have Shock is probably your worst card or whatever, but that's still fine. Light of the Stage, it's been completely insane every time I've seen it. Risk Factor is a card I've already liked, and now is even better, because your hand isn't clogged with these Experimental Frenzies. So it's, you know, you're gonna do like 12 points very quickly. And then they're like, okay, well, I can pay 4 once. And then decks don't have a lot of weight to like come back from that. And Skewer the Critics is another great addition. This is just like a streamlined, excellent deck that carries over from glass. And it's gotten better and significantly. And I think it's just going to be a 2-1 deck.
Yeah, Light of the Stage, going off John's point, has been like just 1-mana divination. It's been like... I didn't realize how insane these spectacle cards were going to be. I felt like that maybe they would see play in a more Rakdos style build, but it's just super streamlined. It's like so many times you find yourself in a situation where, all right, like you're at like 2 life and you just are hoping like that over the course of like 4 turns your opponent does not top deck a burn spell, and every single time it feels like they're always drawing that burn spell and killing you. I mean, it's a very classic like burn aggro deck, and not only is it very good, but players are also going to be drawn to that type of strategy.
This list that you show here, it doesn't even have a Runaway Steamkin, which is like, with Light at the Stage, that card is just insane. Like it grows.
That's you. Very surprising to me. Runaway Steamkin, I've seen in almost every list, so
yeah.
Online.
Yeah, the list that I've been running on MTG Arena also was not playing Runner Race Steamkin, because that's actually why I picked the list that I picked. It was this is really close to what I've been playing on Arena. I just haven't felt like I've needed it. However, I think you could easily say you could cut some of these cards for Runaway Steamkin. I think I want to highlight one of the things that you just said, Seth, and that's the number of times where I feel like I'm alive, and then my opponent, like, top decks a Lavamancer, cast Lavamancer, goes, you know, attacks. I'm like, all right, well, I'll try and kill that. And they're like, okay, lightning you, second main phase, skewer you. And it's just like, all right, well, I'm dead. Like, that was it. And that's so many lightning bolts that we just haven't seen, you know, four lightning strikes, four skewers, four wizards lightning. And then one of the things I've noticed about this deck is, you know, risk factor has gotten so much better, because what mode do you pick?
Always pay four if you think you can.
Yeah.
That's the mode. Well, and when you
that's
can,
right.
You shouldn't even pay four when you can't, because you're going to lose. Part of their deck is at least two damage, so.
Yeah, so I typically, if they're short on mana, I typically let them draw three cards and hope that I get to play an angel in my gate deck. But other than that, I agree with John. I think that you're just taking four and praying a lot of the time. And that's the thing is this deck wants you to take four, and it is one of the reasons that risk factor is so much better than its predecessors in these type of spells. So any additional thoughts on this mono red deck before we move on?
Well, I was just looking at some more circles to see like what they were playing Runaway Steamkin over. And it seems to be that the most common switch is to not play Fanatical Firebrand, which I also don't really agree with. So there's some work that can be done on the deck list and maybe figure out the best version, but Mono Red is good.
I've heard people actually say that they think that you should cut Chain Whirler.
I mean, that's the card I was thinking, but I didn't want to really say that without thinking about it more, because that card does do a lot in a lot of matchups, and, you know, I'm not sure you want to cut it, but it's definitely possible.
Is that something you've thought about, Seth?
No, I won't. I don't. I'm no.
Just astronomically no. Well, it was funny. It was something they talked about on Jerry Thompson's podcast this week, is whether Chain Whirler was even good right now. So,
well, it's a good card. Thing is, this deck is so low to the ground. Like, it's just like burn at your face, do as much damage as possible, and decks don't have time to stabilize. You know, Chain Whirler gets countered, right? Like, it's not really a good card against control.
Yeah, against control, it's not, but against the mirror or other small aggro decks, it is. Like, if they play a Viashino Pyromancer and you play Chain Whirler or, like, something like that.
Yeah, I would be hard-pressed to imagine a world in which, like, Chain Whirler doesn't immediately come back after it's not good, quote-unquote, right? Because what happens is, Chain Whirler's not good for a week. Everybody's like, all right, well, I got to put my X1s down. They're like, no. you don't get to do that. Like, I still exist, right? And that's, it's just such an easy swap to make if the metagame dictates that, right?
Well, the fail case on Steamkin is worse than the fail case on Chain Whirler, I think. Like, when you're not going off, like, Steamkin is pretty much doesn't do anything. And you want every card to be very proactive in doing something. So I could see not playing Steamkin. Although, you know, when I played against Steamkin, it just crushed me. So I'm not sure.
Well, let's go on to the deck that took number one by a substantial margin, coming in with 51 points between the PTQ and the SCG Open. We have Sultai Midrange, and there's no question as to what this deck is trying to do. It's green-black, splashing Hydroid Krasis, and splashing some of them, not all of them, splashing Hostage Taker with some negates out of the board. So the first thing that we saw out of this deck was, I believe the first person to play this was Misplaced Ginger was the first list posted with four Hostage Taker, or with two Hostage Taker, four of these with no negates out of the board. This is a deck that I've been playing. I think at just getting negate out of your board in your green black deck, in any best of three setting, is so huge. Like, it's
negate or even Disdainful Stroke.
Yeah, Disdainful Stroke too, especially in the mirror match, right? Like,
honestly, like, negate's good. I've always In these decks, I always rather have duress, honestly. I want to tap out and be the one putting pressure on, but I also want to make sure they can't, you know, wrath me or fairy, whatever it is that I'm worried about. So I prefer duress. I think having a couple of negates does, you know, is a nice little cushion. Once you've got a board position, you can protect it. This deck has a great sideboard. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not, negate is not the reason to play blue, I don't think, but it's like a nice to be able to diversify, having some duress, some negate. Especially if you are like you're drawing into cards later on with your Crassuses. So having generally later in games, you want to be drawing into counters rather than discard. But yeah, the mix is good. Like it's all about the Crassus. The hostage taker, you can take, like, it's nice. Like my version has one hostage taker. The counters are nice, but it's just like, it's about the Crassus. The Crassus is the reason to play the blue, and then you get some small upgrades. So, some of them have Thief of Sanity. I want to say that as well.
I also, it was really funny, early on when building one of the Teemo ramp decks that I was trying out really, really early on, one of the things that we talked about is like, man, I just need more Hydroid Crisis. Like, that's really all my deck wants to do. How do I get more Hydroid Crisis? And one of the things that Mason said to me is like, well, you could play Fine Finality. Like, that would do it. Like, then you always have a second one. And it was really funny because I was like, well, if I'm going to do that, I might as well just, like, play the Explore package and play this. But that deck sounds, you know, whatever. And secretly, it was just great, right? Like, being able to find your Hydroid Crisis back in playing this deck has been like, oh, I get a Hydroid Crisis plus, you know, a Chupacabra. All right, there's just not a chance, like, you're coming back from this card advantage. Because instead of being like a normal 2-for-1 that Fine Finality could often be, or a 3-for-1 if you grab like an Explore Creature or something, it's just like a 7-for-1. It's just like, whatever. Like, this game's over. And it's been pretty insane. Fine Finality in combination with some of the cards that this deck was playing has been pretty huge for me specifically. Can we talk really quickly? So the version that took first place at the SCG was not playing Incubation Druid, but most of the other lists that placed were playing Incubation Druid. Seth, I know you tried this version with Incubation Druid on your stream, if I'm not mistaken. What do you think that lies with the Crisis versus not playing it?
I mean, it's like in that Druid of the Kalos slot that I have been playing around with, so it's not a card that I'm going to go overboard with. It's more of like a one of, maybe a two of. My version had, I believe, one copy of Incubation Druid. Sometimes you will end up leveling it up, so to speak, but most of the time, I mean, it's a ramp creature. It helps the fact that it can make your blue mana and the multi, like, it can make double black, rather, is actually, the fact that it can make blue doesn't matter, pretty much, because you can't make blue unless you already have a blue and you only have single blue cards. So it's a small upgrade. I don't think it's like thinking of it like this. Do you want Druid of the Cowl in your deck? If the answer is yes, then I think you want Incubation Druid and not Druid of the Cowl. But if you wouldn't have wanted Druid of the Cowl, I don't think you want Incubation Druid as that in that slot.
That's exactly where I am with it. I did a deck tech on this deck with Stampkeeper K this week for YouTube. That's exactly what I said. I said, if you were playing a Druid of the Cow, you probably just want to replace it with this. You know, the fact that it gets to upgrade gives you another mana sink in this deck that draws a lot of lands because of Explore Creatures. I couldn't agree with you more there. What are your thoughts on this deck, John?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, there's a bit of a debate, but I think Black-Green was the best deck in previous Standard. By the end of it. And I mean, it's week one, so I'm not at all surprised that, you know, the best deck is still the best deck. I mean, so one of the units, there was no Turbo Fog on the top five. They didn't crack the top eight.
They didn't crack the top 32 in the open.
Okay. And that could be for any number of reasons. Maybe people don't have the right versions or whatever, but like Wilderness Reclamation is a broken card, and I expect that, you know, that's gonna see play and maybe be very good. So, you know, it's early. I think this deck is, I think Crassus is an excellent addition. I like the blue cards.
So you're actually highlighting one of the reasons that I think this deck getting in the gate is so big. When we look at Vant Fog before, and people saying it was broken, it was going to break the format open. Last time it was good, right, in the red-black format, people just started playing negates in different decks, and suddenly that deck just basically fell off the map. And I think that deck is very weak to counter spells. I don't think that's changed.
Well, when you say Turbo Fog, they don't even have to play Fog anymore. Once you have a Reclamation in play, negate. This deck's gonna have a hard time negating Reclamation. They have to accelerate. You have to play your turn three. So the reason why Turbo Fog would lose to a negate is because they had to spend all seven of their mana to cast a Nexus and draw into a Fog. And if you countered either of those things, they were dead. But this deck, if it has 20 mana every turn, they don't have to worry about that.
I pretty much guarantee that if you made this top five sheet based on the MTG Arena metagame, you're gonna get different decks, and this is gonna, and Turbo Fog would definitely be in there.
The classic, Turbo Fog does make the top five for what it's worth.
Sure, I think that Turbo Fog could very very easily and probably should be considered a top five deck over. Like, I probably played that 10 times more than I played against Bant on Arena for whatever that's worth, you know. So there's gonna be players that enjoy playing certain decks more in paper, and Fog is a little bit better in best of one, but it's also just like maybe players just don't enjoy fogging to win games. That's just not a thing that players, you know, want to go to their tournament and start fogging people and be like, oh really, you're doing this to me, like how could you, type thing. And I think that's a little bit of what we have going on there. I think like the power level of Fog, let's not get it twisted, like it's really high. What John is saying is right. Like, you can just play Wilderness Reclamation and basically just win the game, like, it, so to speak. It's just, it's really frustrating to play against. And I know it's probably the deck that has the highest win percentage against me from streaming. So I will say that much.
So what it's worth, the next two decks were sixth place Esper Midrange with 10 points and Bant Nexus with 8 points. So Bant wasn't that far off, right? It's only 3 points out. If we had included the classic, I believe it would have been, if we look here, if we include the classic, Bant Nexus does come in at fifth place with 13 points. So,
well, but your point system, like if we're being clear about it, there was a number one, which was like Golgari by a lot. Then there was a number two, which was Mono Red by a lot.
Right.
And then there was like five or six decks below that.
Right. That are really close to each other. Yeah. Right. So, and one of the reasons that I'm saying.
If I was going to make the top five, I would have Golgari, Mono Red, and I would have Nexus decks. Those would be my top three for whatever that's worth. If you're wondering like
opinions, what I've been saying. Yeah. You know. Yeah, and one of the things that we try to do that I try to make clear on these Power Rankings episode is I'm just trying to present the data, right? This is the winner's metagame. This is what decks are winning, and that doesn't mean that Bant Nexus is a bad deck. I'm not saying that. I don't get a stake in the Power Rankings. I don't get to decide, right?
And it doesn't have to be Bant Nexus. It can be playing Expansion Explosions and.
Yeah, unfortunately, Temur Nexus and Simic Nexus, I think, had 4 points between them, so they did not do well in these. But you know, some of those gate decks were Nexus decks, so it's not like Wilderness Reclamation didn't see play. With that being said, though, before we go, John, I know that you might have wanted to talk about that Esper Midrange deck as well. So why don't we wrap up with that before we jump out of here?
Well, I mean, I only wanted to talk about it because I played it today in a league, and it felt like it has a lot of cards that are really good in some matchups and really bad in other matchups, like Thief of Sanity, Lyra, things like that. The mana is tough to cast your the Basilica Bellhaunt.
So just to be clear, we're talking about the Wyatt Darby.
Wyatt's list.
Yeah.
I just copied his list and ran in a league. I thought Hero is good sometimes. In other matchups, it's not that great. You know, decks go over the top of Hero, like with Hydroid Phrasis. Another deck, though, like that I think should still be on people's radar is it Drake's. I think Terramander is a really good card.
The card crushed me the other day. where I was like really surprised about how fast it was able to be good. The list at the top 8 had played Zero Phoenix. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good take on it. I played against them on a blue deck that had Terramander, and it's a hard card to deal with. Having more than 4 toughness makes it really difficult to deal with. It gets around Lavacoil, gets around Find Finality. So anyway, for the hero deck, like, I think, you know, when Thief of Sanity was just insane sometimes, like, that's a card that I think should see play in sideboards. Dovin is a card that was interesting to me, and I'm not really sure how I feel about it. It was sometimes very good. I think the Esper midrange deck, though, is a little too much right now, just a bunch of good cards that maybe isn't a cohesive strategy against the field. But we'll see. I think Wyatt said he was going to make some changes and write about it, so I'm interested to see what he says.
Let's wrap this up. Don't forget to go to patreon.com/ccmgg, become a direct supporter of the show. Patreon.com is, you know, it's amazing to see what this website has done for content creators like myself. You know, able to really help me get John and Seth on this show. It would not be possible without the support of the listeners. And you know, it means a lot. So, you know, our next goal is to get you some awesome Seth tokens, some awesome John tokens. I gotta be reminded though, Seth. What did you pick
for my token?
Yeah. The construct. That's right. Yeah. I remember.
Construct.
Yeah, there we go. You can find me at Spencer13H. You can find John at JohnSternMTL. You can find Seth at Seth Manfield. And you can find the podcast at CCMTG. You can join the conversation on our Discord for Easy Game Media. It's in the show notes below. Whether you're listening to the podcast on iTunes, whether you're here on YouTube or on the website, that Discord is below. If you want to join on Facebook, where some of the best conversations are happening, go to patreon.com/ccmtg. At just $12 a month, $3 an episode, you can become one of our constructive critics. You get a vote on the episode topics. We just posted a poll on that. You know, there's tons of things going on. You're going to see special things and access to the Pro Tour episode. So here in a couple of weeks, the Pro Tour is coming up, and we'll be doing a special episode, a double episode, where I interview John and I interview Seth about their testing before the Pro Tour and talk about what their experiences, what they expect going in and things like that. And that's only available to those constructed critics and above. So patreon.com/ccmtg to get access to that Facebook group where that episode will be posted. So, you know, any final thoughts from you guys on the week one metagame or anything we talked about today?
I mean, I'm just really excited to get, you know, to play this format. I mean, it's been so long since we've had such a good format, I feel, and there's so many new interesting cards, and I don't know how it'll shake out. So yeah, really into it.
My final thought is just, I'm really glad that somebody brought up the Bant Nexus deck, because while I agree with Seth that the deck is kind of miserable to play against, I do think that having you know, different levels of stop gaps in the format. I don't know what word to use, but like Bant Fog, Gates Control, Esper Control, Mono Red, like having all of these different levels of decks, I think just makes for a better standard format typically. And
that's fair.
And you know, it means that you don't get to just play your X ones. Otherwise, I'm going to put Goblin Chainwaller in my deck and you're going to get punished. No, you don't just get to do this or else I'm going to fog you and take every single turn of the game. You have to build your decks accordingly. And you know, it'll make it so that some decks midrange is really good. Some decks counter spells are really good. Some decks aggro are really good. And that's the type of format and the type of standard format that I really love. And so, you know, I think we saw a little bit of that last season. It ended up kind of ending in a 2-deck format, but we didn't have to see that because it took so long to turn into this Dragons Golgari format, and I hope we get the same thing with this one. Cool. We'll see you all next week with another episode of Constructive Criticism.
Thank you. magic, magic, magic.